fan. On demand. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Sign up to automatically receive the latest reports, features, and Fan 590 show highlights. No waffling. Everything is black and white. Bring it. This is Brady and Walker on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Good morning. Welcome. It's Brady and Walker, Andrew Walker, Greg Brady on your Friday. Blue Jays are going out with a whimper right now. A fifth straight loss last night. Better than the Tampa Bay Bucks, admittedly. 3-2 they lose in the bottom of the ninth at Yankee Stadium.
High standards.
Yeah. Tampa gets their head caved in Atlanta. And I know we had the game, right? There's this Thursday Night Football package. Nobody is happy with that except, you know, if you're sitting there in Atlanta at the Dome.
Sportsnet got a lot of calls asking to show the advanced stats NHL show again. In fact, people were driving to the studio with weapons to say, can you put that on again? That half hour of the Corsi and Fenwick talk? This is bad football. And Lovie Smith's quote was unbelievable. He's like, this is a scar. We're scarred. You live with a scar the rest of your life, and we are. Now we got 13 games left. This is him talking, but beyond embarrassing to lose. I can't think of the last primetime game like that. And like New England when they were just rolling? It might have even been the unbeaten season, Andrew. They beat the Tennessee Titans like 59-0. The Lions have had a couple blowout Thanksgiving games where in the Matt Millen era where they're done 8 minutes in, but I'm trying to think of the last time I saw a night game where it's over after 6 minutes.
Patriots beat the Jets a couple years ago in a Thanksgiving game. And that was bad. That was 45. But this was 56-0 with time to go in the third quarter.
Oh, Atlanta. And at what point does Atlanta take their foot off the gas? It's 35-0 at halftime. You still have to keep moving the football.
Yeah.
And their first halfway through the third quarter is a 40-yard touchdown pass. So it's not like you just can't. It's the NFL. You can't run the ball every play. College football, you almost can when you're playing, you know, when you're Oklahoma playing McNeese State. But these are still NFL players. You can blow a 30-point lead, and you gotta be aware of it. But two quick touchdowns in the third, it's 49-0, and it's laughable. Laughable.
This is the embarrassing part to me, because there's some unbelievable offenses in the NFL that we've seen over the years. You mentioned the Patriots, right? Sometimes it seems Peyton Manning's teams could move the ball at will. Saints could move the ball at will. But it would take 7-8 minutes to get down the field, right? That's half a quarter. You're killing time. What was embarrassing last night was Tampa Bay fumbling every time they got a chance to hold the ball, right? Because that's the great equalizer. You can get your ass kicked 32-7, right? Yeah. But it's just another scoreline, right? 56-0 with a few minutes to go in the third quarter. That's because you're turning the ball over. It was embarrassing.
Yeah, and no one thinks this is not a Tampa team. We mentioned some other bad football teams, as in the Lions were about 7 years in a row. No one thinks Tampa's terrible. Even if people whiffed on picking them to do great things this year, they're still not going to lose 13, 14 games. This isn't a team that's going to be drafting first or second overall.
Well, there'd be some people questioning you there now.
I know they have a bye week next week. I know they just look like they had a bye week. And then they're going to Pittsburgh. So they'll go to Pittsburgh and they go to New Orleans. They're not home again until they play the Ravens October 12th. So two road games to try and in tough places, Pittsburgh, New Orleans, to try and not be 0-5. So I still think there's 5 or 6 wins on the schedule, but I might change my. I reserve the right to change my mind by mid-November.
And we always talk about overreaction week to week, especially early in the NFL season. But this is, and you'll hear it today everywhere you go. This is the first team in this early National Football League campaign where that's it. They're the first team you cross off to not make playoffs. And throw Jacksonville probably in the mix, but even they wouldn't be ranked last in people's power rankings. Now it's going to be Tampa.
The Raiders will try to, yeah, the Raiders will
to match
try
them
to
at
go
at 0-3 this Sunday.
Yeah, they play in Foxborough, so that's no fun for them. But, yeah, it'd be a surprise. Like, it'd be... Everyone was surprised by Houston last year. Let's be honest. 2-0. They lose 14 straight games. They don't exactly play in a tough division. And it all just fell. It all just caved in. But they'd made the playoffs 2 previous years. This was meant to be a Tampa team. Houston had a window. This was meant to be a Tampa team a little bit on the up and up. that was going to threaten at least to be interesting in December, and they won't be now.
Leafs camp gets underway yesterday with fitness testing. The first on-ice session goes today, and coming up on Monday will be their first preseason game. They play their annual game in London, Ontario, against the Flyers. That's the game that Nazem Kadri always has about 7 points in.
Feels that way, yeah.
And Jose Bautista goes deep, some dramatics, but the Jays get walked off because of an error at Yankee Stadium. We'll get into it. Also, today in history, now and then, Ryan Fabre will be in Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Now, more Brady and Walker on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
I haven't read no article or anything yet, so I can't really even say what you guys are talking about. I've obviously talked to Spotter a couple times, but it's not about that. It's more about golf and stuff. I don't really talk about hockey in the summer, to be honest.
542, it's Phil Kessel. Let me ask you a question.
I'll answer it.
So, by the way, can I say, you're a very good human being. You bought a box of coffee this morning for everybody.
Don't get
Friday.
Me started. You want a
free box?
You want a headline? I'll give you a headline. Walker almost kills old Tim Hortons man.
Yeah, you got some tension going on. And it's not sexual with this Tim Hortons guy.
I think he must listen to the show and hate the show. Like, it's personal.
A lot of people, that's what I tell people. I go, if you hate it so much, stop listening. And they just don't. They just keep listening because they hate it. At least they're not indifferent to it. All right, a Phil Kessel question. I'm ready.
Okay.
He caught a giant shark with Tyler Bozak in the summer.
Yeah,
how about that?
450 pounds. Yeah. Crazy.
It's a big fight.
That was the highlight. So, okay, he answers all these questions. And given the everything that happened yesterday, and everyone gets so worked up, and here's Leafs camp, and in walks Kessel, and, whatever, casual, and answers the question, and laughs everything off, and it's just clear as day that people, I don't want to say make this stuff up, but people just want so badly for things to blow up and it to be the big story, and it's not. Should everyone just, I'm not saying us, because I think we were on the right side of the whole thing. Should people just be, and I mean media reporters, embarrassed? Like, you're standing there in the scrum, and it's not a big deal, and you're trying to make this like a playground fight. It's just, it's embarrassing.
I'm trying to think.
I'm embarrassed.
I'm probably have less problem with the original story. The only problem I have with the Festrick story yesterday was the sourcing and the anonymity granted. Like, if these guys put their name behind it, I'm weirdly more okay with the story, because I do think they're public comments, and everyone learns from things. So Steve Spott walks the comments back a little bit even yesterday and says, hey, we're trying to joke around. The coaches who go to this clinic want stories. And then Phil Kessel yesterday diffuses it. And you're right. But I felt like that for 2 weeks after the Randy Carlyle, how did James Reimer play it? Okay, just okay.
And then kabloom.
Right.
Kablam.
I'm not there every day, but I'm trying to think of a team. I've been, sort of more in the trenches with a bunch of different teams, and I'm trying to think of teams that had egos on it. I mean, in Detroit, Brett Hull wouldn't talk to anybody for about 5 straight weeks and screened obscenities at 4 or 5 different reporters whenever he saw them. But I can't think, and that doesn't even happen. I've never seen that happen in 8 years in Toronto. And I'm not in there. I'm in there once a month instead of 4 times a week. So I don't know. But I agree with you. I was embarrassed by the James Reimer, Randy Carlyle coverage. I was embarrassed. I've been embarrassed by the Ron Wilson won't name his starting goalie tonight. What a jerk. So guess who the starting goalie is? He doesn't have to tell. Many coaches won't tell you that. I don't know where it goes from here. But, yeah, Kessel said everything he had to say yesterday, and I don't think we think anything differently of him one way or the other. Everyone's got different opinions. First guy that calls yesterday, he's lazy, he doesn't want it. Jiminy, I don't know how to help people like that. I can't help people like that. You can't help people like that.
No, and the conversation will go on today, and sure, you discuss athletes, and Phil Kessel is a... And we used this word yesterday and debated whether he is. I don't think he's polarizing. Well, maybe he is, right? But it's not. But it's for different reasons.
He is
polarizing because there are people like that caller yesterday that's what they boil it down to.
But I still think last season, everybody was. It was almost a unanimous scenario where you say $64 million for 8 years. It's good for the team. Great. For Kessel, he deserves it. Let's move forward and build around him. But I saw it here at the end with Matt Sundin too. It's
It's very much, you know, is Matt's all in? How badly does he want to win? Does he go to management and say, get me this player and that player? And that also wasn't quite who Matt Sundin was. Curtis Joseph dealt with it too here as well. I think it's just, this is part of the Stanley Cup drought, and people get unnecessarily criticized here. Now, I don't think it dissuades free agents from signing here. I think this is still a very desirable market. I think it's the losing that's dissuaded free agents from coming here.
I would agree with that. I don't think it's the media pressure. I think it's somewhat bunk there. I think this is my annoyance, I think, with the, and a big time brackets here, or quotation marks, the Toronto sports fan, is that a lot of people are built into this way of thinking that it's about one guy, right? I mean, all year, what did we hear? The Blue Jays have certain problems, and things are going to have to be addressed and certain parts of the lineup improved. But all year, people are like, we don't have an ace. We don't have a Cy Young candidate. And at the end of the day, that was really maybe the least of their problems, right? And it's the same with the Leafs teams over the years, right? There's Sittler. There's Gilmore. Now there's Sundin. It's always one guy to do everything. Is Phil Kessel the guy to lead you to a championship? Well, guess what you need to win a Stanley Cup? And look at the Kings and look at the Hawks. You need about 15 good players, right? Yeah. You need Kessel. And if Kessel's your Patrick Kane, yeah, maybe you do need another guy up the middle. Maybe you do need a Jonathan Toews type. But guess who the Hawks had? They have Toews and Kane, but then they had Hossa. And then they had Sharp. And then they have Keith. And then they have Seabrook. You need a bunch of guys. Not only do you need Kessel and Phaneuf, you need Morgan Rielly to be a star.
Yeah.
You know, you need someone else to get good. You need
everything.
You know, you need Tyler Bozak to be a decent second line center.
Joffrey Lupul stays healthy.
Sure.
David Clarkson goes
15-15.
Nylander
becomes a star on an entry level deal.
Yeah, those things
That's
have to end up working out. And they paid for years of trading first round picks, and they paid for years of signing the wrong older free agents. Once the cap came in, they weren't ready. They weren't prepared, and they made poor decisions that affected everybody. Everybody from the goalie to the coach, really, and who the coach got to play.
And it takes a long time to get out of it. And the good news is they kind of are. Like, they're not paying guys like Colby Armstrong and Darcy Tucker anymore.
There's no obvious vet that's destined to the Marlins,
right,
where you got a Mike Comisera contract, or you blew it with Brett Lebda. Right now on this team, there isn't that.
We're past the point of, oh boy, we don't have first-round picks for the next 3 years. They have all their picks. They've drafted Rielly. We'll see what Nylander is. They're out of that, but no one's pretending they're a Stanley Cup contender right now. So are you going to judge Phil Kessel because he doesn't win a cup this year with the Leafs? You can't. Can't do it.
And I don't mind the Cy Young analogy either, because, I mean, Pittsburgh's going to make the playoffs again without... Who on earth is their number one starter?
The Orioles too, really.
Yeah, exactly. Baltimore. You could almost say now with Richards out in Anaheim. I know CJ Wilson had a good game yesterday, but he's had an up and down year. Jared Weaver's up and down sometimes. They have better staff than the Jays, but but they're also the best team. They got the best record in baseball without a guy that you'd absolutely have to take in a critical situation.
Yeah, Felix Hernandez might not make playoffs. Right? Yeah. Not saying you wouldn't want to have him,
Kansas
obviously.
City's all in with James Shields, and they may fall short.
550. Ryan Faber was in Friday's edition of Now and Then.
Now and Then. A hopefully but potentially not entertaining look back at some of the great and not so great moments in this day's history. I'll be
back in time. How about that? We have nothing left. 4 minutes. We told the Toronto sports fan what they are, and that's it.
We didn't talk about Teemu Selanne calling out Bruce Boudreau. So look forward to that for the next 3 hours.
Yeah. You guys are on fire. On fire.
Sweet green shirt.
Thank you. I appreciate the compliment.
That's strong.
September the 19th. On this date in 1946, it was the first Cannes Movie Festival. Walker doesn't know anything about movies, so he should never go there.
Okay. Nice. Okay. Remember the Titans. Uh-huh. Should win Oscars.
He should never go there. I don't think it was on his bucket list.
People don't forget.
Yeah, the guy who thinks Caddyshack isn't funny. He loves Van Helsing, too. Anyway, have you ever been to France, Brady?
I've driven through France to get to Holland and Belgium, but I've never really gone to Paris. I haven't gone to any of the big cities. The big Euro there is there in almost a year and a half. I want to spend about 2 weeks in France, 2 years from now.
I'd like to go. Walker, you just go to Russia, right?
Yeah, that's it. When I go to Europe, straight to Russia.
It sounded pretty nice, though. There was vodka and beaches and sleeping and no internet.
Yep. Hey, listen. It's not my choice.
I didn't say it was good.
I'd like to go to other places in the world, but no, I go to small town Russia.
It sounded like Bob Cajun. Just you got a lot longer to get there. Fenland Falls.
1968, Tigers pitcher Denny McClain.
Too much Tigers time.
Collects win number 31.
Yeah. I just want to play the sound of it.
What's the most wins someone could logically get now? Like, what was Verlander a couple of years ago? 23? And he cooled off at the end. He had 24.
Kershaw could have hit 25 this year.
Kershaw goes for 20 today.
Yeah, and he missed a month.
Yeah, he missed a month.
Yeah, I think 25 is about the max.
Unbelievable.
Mark Burley could have got 25.
He was on pace for 29 or something.
If you'd bet somebody around your office on June 1st, Mark Burley's going to have under 15 wins. You couldn't. People would have been here. I'll take your money.
What does he have?
12.
That's unbelievable.
He's at 2 in 3 months.
He had 10 in May. What happened?
Yeah, it's pretty incredible.
It's off. And yet they've been 500 in his games. He just hasn't stuck around for the wins.
Pitching wins do matter, though.
Yes, but his ERA has been much, much higher. He hasn't deserved a bunch of wins anyway. Yeah,
it is what it is. He is who he is. You know, he's pitching some ground balls. Sometimes they get through the infield, and sometimes they
don't. I hope he gets his 200 innings. I really hope that. That was my goal coming into the season for the Jays. So Burley gets his 200 innings. He's 12 away.
It's a good thing.
Consistent.
1993, the number one movie 21 years ago now. Striking Distance with Bruce Willis. Underrated Bruce Willis movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's it? Sarah Jessica Parker.
Sarah Jessica Parker looks good in that.
I'm
not in on the horsey Sarah Jessica Parker thing.
She looks better in that movie than she does in a lot of things.
I love horses!
I'm worried she's had too much work done, but the late Dennis Farina's in that. Tom Sizemore.
Oh, yeah. Like Sizemore.
I can never tell Tom Sizemore and Michael Madsen apart. I really couldn't.
Sizemore, they're
very similar guys.
Yeah, they are. Sizemore's shorter. Sizemore also in Harley Davidson, the Marvel.
Did you enjoy Robert Pastorelli, who passed away about 10 years ago from a drug overdose?
Michael Madsen, very good in Ryan Favreau's favorite movie, Free Willy.
No, he was good in Kill Bill, which I liked.
As Ian always says, Sarah Jessica Parker looks like a foot.
Oh my God. Women are harsh on women, I'll tell you that. When does that Indian movie with the guy from Mad Men come out with the pictures? When's that come out on DVD?
I've seen like
I know you didn't
no,
see in the theater.
No
we
buzz
asked you to,
about that.
Walker and I asked you to go with us. You said it looked good.
You guys are idiots.
I like it because it's accurate. That's what I like about it.
Yeah, I mean those guys are in high A ball right now. It's been an amazing story. They make $38,000 a year.
Yeah.
Tell you what, the feel-good scout that drafted those guys in the movie, he better be fired right now.
Guys are playing for the West Michigan Whitecaps.
You guys done?
Anyway, yeah, we're done.
All right, well, happy birthday, Bill Medley, who sang the song from, Dirty Dancing. Yeah? No? Okay.
I got him I wasn't sure if he was alive. I'm being serious. I was worried you had a dead person get a birthday today.
I checked it this morning. He's 74 today.
We had a meeting where we had a Gary Glitter controversy yesterday, and it wasn't about child pornography. He's a pedophile, but he's still with us.
And Jimmy Fallon is 40, and the number one song from 1969 are getting you set for tonight's Primetime Sports Roundtable. It's the Archies with Sugar Sugar.
It's good.
How do you top that? 5:55.
Bob Dole saw these guys when he was in high school.
It's now and then. It's always a good time. Come back with the Blue Jays. Yeah, it's over. We know that. They lose their fifth straight. They might finish the year at 500.
If they win all 11 and
what?
The Royals...
They only have 10. Okay, what fine. Is this team and where did it go south? Next, Brady and Walker, Sportsnet 590. And you got me.
Like free sports tickets, trips, and memorabilia so you can trick your friends, colleagues, and mistresses into thinking that you're some sort of high roller? Hey, join the club.
Welcome to the club.
The Fan Club. Log on to sportsnet590.ca. The Jays losing streak hits 5.
Hit on the ground to first through the legs of Adam Lind. The Yankees win it 3-2 and win game one of this four-game series. Sanchez got his ground ball. and Adam Lind reached down to glove it, and it went right through him.
You're listening to Brady and Walker on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
6:02, Brady and Walker on your Friday. The Blue Jays lose their fifth straight game. And what are they? Where did this go south? Last night, did it matter? No, it didn't matter. But they might be a 500 team at the end of this, Greg, and that's what people are asking today.
Yeah, Adam Lind's error, I mean, I heard it described as Bill Buckner-esque. I'll put it that way.
It's a little harder hit than the Bill Buckner one. But
and Adam Lind's knees are a little bit less like aluminum, but an aluminum bat. If that game had really mattered...
Oh, good heavens.
That's something he lives with the rest of his existence as they lose just right through the wickets on a Chase Headley. It's a sharp grounder, right? And the guys at third, what are we talking? There's one out or nobody out. So he's got
One out runner at third.
Was there one out?
Yeah,
Gardner sacrifice. That's right. So either way, probably too sharply to make a play at home. So it may not have made a difference anyway.
No, he wasn't running. To home. The runner on third.
Richardson was in for Young. Okay.
So Adam Lind would have just stepped on first, and then who knows? Maybe Sanchez gets the next guy, we go to extras. So, yeah, it was a game-losing error, but...
It's great to see Juan Francisco back at third base late in the game. Just good, happy memories of May when they were 21-7. It was great.
We've talked all year about big picture, small picture stuff with the Blue Jays, right? You can't get bent out of shape out of a three-game losing skid because it's a big picture season. Well, now we're over that. Should people at the end of the day... And I know they're upset right now, obviously. They've lost five in a row. They've fallen out of contention. Should they feel good about this season? Bad about this season? Right? What has this season been?
I think there's been a step forward because there's been an improvement in wins. And yet, the fact that expectations were raised so much makes it's the hardest emotional Blue Jays season. I think it's one of the hardest three or four Blue Jays seasons in their 36-year history ever to deal with. 87 was awful, but they'd already won, and you knew they were gonna keep getting better. 90, they blew a lead late against Boston in September. And I can't think of a year since then where you don't just go, well, everybody's better, so what are we going to do? We can't get the wild card. We won 85 games. What can you do? We're stuck with the Yankees in Boston. And that got blown out of the water, Andrew, a few years ago with Tampa winning, and now we've had two Baltimore playoff bursts, four or five Rays playoff achievements. And then
that's now a dead argument.
Yeah,
for sure.
You're the kid sitting there. You're the kid sitting there with no lunch every October. So there's progress, but now this is by far the most important offseason I think we've seen in years for the Toronto Blue Jays. Years, and they'd be on top of their game, on top of it, and making trades. They were a very good team in 1990 when they made the Alomar. The Alomar acquisition and said goodbye. I still can't believe they said goodbye to Fred McGriff and Tony Fernandez. Absolute crowd favorites. But they did it with a greater pitcher in mind. And I'm not telling you that something huge needs to happen. But what I'd say to you is status quo isn't going to be well embraced by a lot of Blue Jays fans. And I even think the logical ones won't embrace same manager, same lineup, same veteran pitchers. Certainly the bullpen they tweak every year. And you said it earlier to me, it's the easiest thing to tweak, and you're right about that. It's easy to you'll find another Steve Delabar that you just love for a year and a half, and you can find another Mark Zepchinski. But I don't know what you do with your position players, because even that lineup last night, 5-9, it's so soft. I mean, even Shai Davidi's weighing in and putting sarcastic digs on where they are 5-9 right now. And if Brett Laurie's healthy, you don't have to worry about that. But then that's the big question as well. Can Brad Laurie stay healthy? Can Adam Lind play more than 110 games? Those are big questions.
It does suck when the caveat of the whole thing is health, right? Because you could say last night, if it matters, and you had Asturias at second and Laurie at third and Melky Cabrera playing left. Yeah, I mean, it's pie in the sky. And you expect your players to be healthy, right? They never expected to see Kawasaki play another 100 games this season, right? That was never the plan. Right, there was never the plan in place, and then guys get hurt, right? And you can't. I'm not saying blame it on injuries. Of course not. Of course not. But there are big decisions to make. You know what my impression was last night, and I mean Jose Bautista, and I hate it when guys go in on him now. Maybe it's the same conversation as Phil Kessel, because he's been unbelievable. He hits another home run, a clutch home run to tie it up in the eighth inning. Slams the bat down in a mean nothing game. What emotion he shows. What a month he's had. It is unfair to him, right? And I'm not saying Anthopoulos had a ton of options at the deadline per se, or Chase Headley would have vaulted this team into the playoffs, but they got to do it for that guy. They got to find a way to improve.
I know.
And that includes Melky Cabrera, and it includes another player somewhere.
And I thought Jose came off badly on July 31st, but that's a snap judgment on my part. Is he coming off badly or is he not? And that's sort of what we're here to do. And in the cool light of day, in retrospect, I understood it. I do think he'd walk a couple specific comments back about it, but I get the passion and the excitement. And he sees this as an amazing opportunity. What I like so far, Andrew, he wants to do it here instead of going somewhere else. And no one would blame him. This isn't even Roy Halladay in his last season saying, you know, please do anything you can, however possible, to build around me, or I'll go somewhere else and win. He's not even making that threat yet. Now, that's why the next 12 months are critically important, because you got to keep... Dickey and Burley have had serviceable enough seasons. Everybody worried about the rotation at the start of the year. Some kids came up and pitched well.
Dickey especially.
So when does it... It will end, and probably end quickly. And it always does for veteran pitchers. Guys, you know, even the Randy Johnsons of the world, they fall off a cliff when... Kenny Rogers, those guys fall off cliffs when they're done. Because we saw it here with Dave Steeb, too. So, well, Burley and Dickey have maybe one more good season. This offseason is so vital.
Plenty of things to explore in this. John Gibbons, by the way, coming up at Baseball Central at noon today with Jeff Blair. It is 6:09. Brady and Walker, let's get you to your Friday morning six-pack.
This is your Friday morning six-pack. Six things you need to start your day.
Number six, bear with me. Don't hit me. Quarterback Ricky Ray will have his best target back. The Argos visit the Lions at BC Place tonight. Chad Owens returns to the Argos lineup. He's been sidelined since August the 23rd. Toronto's lost four in a row. Number five, NHL.
You did it.
Pardon me?
You made it.
I know. It's amazing.
Now, can I just say they're a half game behind?
No, don't say it.
I got a rouge for you right here.
It's big. Hamilton is playing better at 3-3. Okay.
We almost got through it. Number five, training camps in the NHL begin. 19 days to go until the puck drops for... NHL hockey. Now, we will get to Leafs camp in a second, but Pittsburgh Penguins news yesterday. Crosby and Malkin not in camp yet, sitting out as a quote-unquote precaution. First-year coach Mike Johnson said both players' injuries will not last long, but never good news if you are a fan of the Penguins.
You all, now that we're past the point where we think, remember all the talk on Crosby when he had the concussion and then the second concussion was, what are you going to get at him every year? And maybe we're past that. But don't you think that with Malkin now? Malkin missed 22 games last year with injury. And when he was there, he was great. He had a 72-point season in 60 games. He was great the year before. But his overall durability, he's had a lot of devastating injuries in a young career. He's only 28 years old.
Number four, unfortunately, some details emerging from the latest domestic violence incident. This one centered around Arizona Cardinals running back Jonathan Dwyer. So here he is. Police say he headbutted his wife, broke her nose after she refused his advances, and then punched her in the face the next day. If you were dying to know some details of said incident, that is what Jonathan Dwyer is facing.
And yet the Cardinals are moving away from this man, this player, and yet he's still not been cut. Like, he's getting a paycheck this weekend, and I think that's going to be the really interesting thing now, is this new, hey, let's put the guy on the reserve list. We pay him. I understand it almost more with Adrian Peterson than I do with a case like this, where Jonathan Dwyer, if it's a bottom line situation, he's not going to make or break you, whether you keep him or not.
Right, of course. And I get it, too. People bristle at the fact that, okay, those guys are sitting at home, and yes, they're embarrassed, and yes, it's tumultuous, but they don't like that they're getting paid. I mean, AP's getting paid, what is it, $600,000 this week alone? I get that people don't like that.
And until you get your trial, Tony Corners made this point on PTI yesterday. He said, players are going to want speedy trials. Before, it was like, postpone the trial till the end of the season in case something goes wrong with it. Now, I'd want my trial. I'd want to be in court now if I'm Adrian Peterson. I can plea bargain this, say I'm a changed man, and maybe win. I'm not pulling for the guy, but he would win some public support back.
And I'm not pulling for Jonathan Dwyer either. These allegations are brutal. Yeah. They're ugly. But you can't, I don't know, can you fire someone based on what they're being accused of until everything,
until everything
goes through the process? I don't know.
I still do. But you can certainly send them home with pay. You can absolutely, you know, any charge you and I would get.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then there's tricky things like you get a teacher caught with child porn on his computer. You got to get him out of that school right away. Right. You have to. So there's no due process there. I'm not a big believer in due process for private companies. You don't owe that to your employee. You decide who you want to work for. Who you want to work for you.
Number three, Thursday nighter in Atlanta. It was not a real good game. 56-0 at one point. The Falcons absolutely curb stomped the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. It was, even the play-by-play team was calling it embarrassing. It was 56-0 with minutes to go in the third quarter. Tampa couldn't even hang on to the ball.
I'm familiar enough, I certainly am, from my many titles back in the past, that someone could win their fantasy week with the Tampa Bay defense having started. But they're probably in a deep hole right now. Yeah. They're going to need a hell of a comeback. A hell of a comeback starting Sunday if you started the Buccaneers defense last night. They did grab some turnovers.
Jason Lacanfora, our NFL insider, was at the game last night. He witnessed that debacle. He will join us coming up at 6:22. Number two, as mentioned, Jays lose 3-2 in walk-off fashion in the Bronx. The Oakland A's right now are imploding. They get swept by the lowly Texas Rangers. They're a half game back of the Royals. Seattle is a game back of them. The number one thing you need to know. Leaf camp begins on the ice today down at the MasterCard Center. We are 19 days away from the puck drop. Camp battle, you will be watching the closest.
I mean, weirdly, I don't think second line forward is penciled in by any stretch. And Randy Carlyle even said yesterday he might consider moving Joffrey Lupul up and I guess dropping James Van Riemsdyk down. And I'm not sure it's dropping. There was a time when the Grabowski-MacArthur-Kuhlman line was more productive than Kessel-Bozak-Lupul at certain points. So people wanted to gift this to David Clarkson last year. They wanted other players to step in. David Booth has obviously played a lot of top 6 minutes in his NHL career. So that kind of does fascinate me. Who's on the second line? Who's on the third line?
6:15, Brady and Walker has mentioned Jason Lacanfora coming up in minutes. And also, Teemu Selanne. Is it a rare black mark on his illustrious career? We'll tell you what he said.
Primetime Sports with Bob McCowan. Today at 4. Back at it. Brady and Walker. Sportsnet 590. The Fan.
2 minutes to go in the third, second and 12. And Smith, blocker in front. Turns the corner, and Tampa is flat-footed. That is an embarrassment right there.
Well said. 6:22, Brady and Walker. Was that the most embarrassing game you've seen in the NFL ever?
Nighttime game. Like a nighttime game.
Well, I mean, you really got to rack your brain to, like, it was like you were watching midway through the third quarter when this thing is 56-0. It was like you were watching that bad romantic comedy where Ben Stiller is screwing up and you're embarrassed to watch it, even if you're by yourself. That's what I felt.
Someone reminded me of November 15, 2010. It's Eagles in Washington, and Michael Vick and DeSean Jackson just went wacko. It was 45-14 at the end of the first half.
Yeah, I remember that.
But
yeah.
And that game itself propelled Michael Vick into like the MVP race. Like Tom Brady's having a great season, and people are like, but Vick last night, and you know, he threw 6 touchdowns in the game. But yeah, that's a 21-point game at halftime. This was a 35-0 lead at the half, and then they made it 49-0 so quickly in the third quarter.
This was the embarrassing part of it, is that, hey, we've seen great offenses, right? Peyton Manning's Colts, Marvin Harrison, Reggie Wayne, you know, Edgerrin James, Peyton Manning's Broncos, Tom Brady's Randy Moss, we've seen unbelievable, unstoppable offenses. Sometimes you can't stop teams, but they still take time off the clock. There's never an excuse to fumble the ball like you have money on it. And that's what Tampa was doing last night, right? The reason this was 56-0 is because they turned the ball over 4 times inexplicably. For Lovie Smith, that's the embarrassment.
That's the embarrassing
that's
part.
That's the embarrassment.
Yeah, and I don't think they're weighed down by any kind of expectations, even if people are thinking they're going to finally show some signs of improvement. I remember when they won that Super Bowl. Like, they'd been a long time leading up to it. And John Gruden gets there and is able to do what Tony Dungy wasn't able to do. And I kept thinking there'd be more from that Tampa Bay team. I kept thinking, I know we've only really seen the Patriots be able to do it, period, in the last 15 years. But I always remember that Tampa defense thinking they're a team that's going to be able to go back pretty consistently. And they've really been a consistency nightmare for the last 6 or 7 years. You can't count on them at all.
Our NFL insider, Jason Lackenfor from CBS, was at the game last night. He's going to join us in a couple of minutes. Yesterday, Sportsnet.ca, Chris Johnston had this story on Teemu Selanne. He got a hold of his admittedly Finnish-written biography or autobiography that's coming out. And Solani's quote on his former head coach, Bruce Boudreau, was something to the effect of, if I had any other coach in Anaheim, I would be back playing this season. He's 44 years old. He had 9 goals last year. Are these fair comments?
Yeah, he leans into them pretty significantly. As much about ice time as anything else, he suggests he was promised, because he was looking at a contract offer from the LA Kings, looking at a contract offer from the Winnipeg Jets, and that'll get people in Manitoba all excited because they adore Solani there, obviously. But he came back to Anaheim because Solani claims he was promised, hey, you'll play 15 minutes a night and we'll give you power play time.
And he played 14.07,
yeah. But his production kind of fell into a well, didn't it? And at that point, maybe it's a little bit of both sides, where Solani might have that opinion, because Jonas Hiller came out, the goaltender, who has probably reason to be bitter. I mean, Hiller was basically lost his job to John Gibson late in the season, a kid, and wasn't gonna try and take the Ducks, wasn't gonna be able to take the Ducks anywhere in the playoffs. But Solani's production fell off the map. But he also may be right about this with Boudreau. Maybe it won't work with Bruce Boudreau in Anaheim, like it didn't work in Washington. Maybe this is a good regular season coach, who's obviously had playoff disappointment after playoff disappointment. Imagine if he lost that game 7 to the Dallas Stars. Then you're just like, Bruce Boudreau can't get out of his own way in the playoffs. I thought he was going to lose his job. I don't know if you did or not. I really did. Even when they lost to the Kings.
No, I didn't think that. I mean,
they were embarrassed home in game 7.
Yeah, but you get to game 7 against the LA Kings, the eventual Stanley Cup champions, who rolled over the Rangers.
I know, but Todd,
right?
McClellan was close to losing it. Obviously, he was close to losing his job. They thought long and hard in San Jose.
When I first heard that quote yesterday from Solani, my opinion of, and he's one of the great guys of all time, right? There's no hidden behind the curtain, oh, Solani's a jerk. I don't think anybody feels that way. But my first reaction when I heard this was, get over it, Teemu. You're 44. You had 9 goals. You were playing for arguably the best team in hockey in the regular season that won its division. What is Boudreau supposed to do? Change things up when you've won 55 games? Like, what, you want more power? To me, it sounded selfish.
He'd have to give reasons, Andrew, that would be beyond just him. Like, you know what I'm saying? If he says, I don't like the way Bruce Boudreau juggled our goalies last year. I don't like the way Bruce Boudreau handles Ryan Getzler for Corey Perry.
No, it was about him.
I know. That's the problem with it. That's the one problem with it. Because if players often do this after a coach is fired and they say, yeah, this wasn't working and that wasn't working. But they don't say it when they played there. And often they just make it about themselves. If he can give a broader picture here other than, well, I was promised 15 minutes and I got 14.07. I know that looks selfish to people.
That was my first reaction to it. I've softened a little bit, and here's why. Right, some people will say, like, this is a black eye. This is a bad ending to Teemu Selanne's career, and maybe it is a little bit. But I think over his 20-some years in the National Hockey League and the way he's treated people, the way he's treated you and me when we've spent time honestly in locker rooms, he deserves the benefit of the doubt. And I'm not saying that he's right about Bruce Boudreau. I think, though, this is a classic case of an all-world competitor that loves to win and doesn't want to go out quietly. And I think that's okay, right? I know that when a guy like that steps away from the game, and we've seen it in so many sports, it's hard to walk away, right? It was hard for Brett Favre to walk away. And I get it. If Teemu Selanne is one of those guys that has to extrapolate a little bit, right, or project, I understand.
Very first playoff series I ever covered was Detroit and Anaheim in 99, and you'd walk in that room and Selanne and Paul Kariya would just, they'd take any question from anybody. You could ask the same question, 8 different variations, and eventually in your career you hopefully get better at asking questions. But those guys were utter class.
I was a kid, and Selanne and guys like, I don't know, Saku Koivu would have all the time in the world for you.
Something about Finns.
Nice guys.
Yeah, really. There's a few. Jason Lockenfor is our NFL insider for CBS Sports. What a weekend. Super Bowl rematch, 425 with the Broncos in Seattle to play the 1-1 Seahawks in some great early games, including San Diego at a sold-out Ralph Wilson in Buffalo. Jason was in Atlanta, Georgia last night, of course, for the CBS game Tampa and Atlanta. Jason, thanks a lot for getting up early for us.
Oh, my pleasure. Had to be up early for this flight either way, gentlemen. rocking and rolling at the airport here.
Well, we feel, yeah, I don't doubt it. We feel a little less special now, but that's okay. Atlanta, we were comparing it to the way Philadelphia just went to town on Washington on Monday Night Football a few years ago. They just stopped the fight. They just stopped the fight 6-7 minutes in if they could have last night.
Well, I would say that, except for Atlanta didn't want to stop the fight. I mean, the end of the first half, they're running their two-minute offense. It's already 35-0. They don't run the ball at all. They're throwing from their own five. Try a 60-yard field goal at the end of the half. So they weren't exactly calling off the dogs. Even in the second half, came out kind of firing again. And look, you can't stop the fight at the other team. Instead of, you know, bandaging their wounds, just rip them wide open with just ridiculous turnover after ridiculous turnover.
Yeah, so, there was that element, maybe till about the end of the third quarter, that this was a team, like this was a college team needing BCS points. Like this was, they needed the polls to get them to launch them ahead of LSU in Florida. That's what it looked like last night.
Yeah, it was the men against the boys, and Tampa's got a lot of problems. I don't believe in really Lovie Smith, and I certainly don't believe in his Tampa 2 scheme. I thought they'd have a top 8 offense that would overcome some of that, but, you know, it hasn't been anything close to it. Their offensive coordinator, Jeff Tedford, hasn't called a game yet. Josh McCown's been bad. The reshuffled offensive line's been horrible. They can't get Doug Martin on the field. They're not using Vincent Jackson. It's a complete disaster.
Jason Lockenfor joins us on Brady and Walker from Atlanta. 56-14 was the final last night on Thursday Night Football. I can imagine Tampa talk shows today, and there will obviously be an outcry for Lovie Smith's job. Is there merit to that at this point when you lose a game like that?
Oh, he's three games in, man. I mean, as much as I don't think he's a necessarily dynamic you know, coach who's at the vanguard of current schemes and, you know, all that. I mean, it's been three games. I mean, that's crazy talk. But I don't know when they win their first game. Start looking at their schedule. They got a bunch of road games coming up. This could easily be a team for me now that's staring at 0-6 and 0-7 relatively soon. I'm not sure how bad McCown's come is right now, but they might as well play Glennon anyway at this point since he's younger. And this is starting to look already like a team that is going to be drafting very high and will likely use that very high draft pick on a quarterback, but you can't fire your coach.
Jason Lockenfor, our guest. Denver-Seattle, we mentioned on CBS. Denver's going to get what we would deem, I guess, a healthy Wes Welker, having recovered from the concussion, we think, in the last few weeks. He's been fully engaged in practices this week, but he's a player that we'll all watch a little closely. That's a game that's going to have a lot of eyeballs, and to see Welker, whether he's got any rust and as well how he absorbs hits, and he's going in against the Seattle secondary. They're not the kindest lads on the nicest of days, are they?
No, and I mean, you know, anyone who thinks this proposition with concussions isn't anything other than week to week is kidding themselves. Especially at this stage of Welker's career, especially given all he's been through, with head trauma. So we'll see. I think you just have to kind of monitor that every week. And obviously for his sake, you hope that there aren't any more brain injuries that he suffers and that things do progress smoothly. But you're right. He plays in the slot. It's a high traffic area. And especially a team like Seattle, you're going to absorb your fair amount of abuse. But that should be a great game. Fingers crossed that atones for the sin that we put upon America and Canada yesterday. I broadcasted that Thursday night game.
I think people will forgive you to some extent. Yeah.
Hey, we got about 30 seconds, Jason. Buffalo Bills are 2-0. San Diego comes into town this week. Have they piqued your interest a little bit?
Yeah, they have. I'm intrigued. I need to see them keep it up for more than a couple weeks. I need to see this out of EJ Manuel and that offensive line over a sustained period of time. But this will be a nice little test for them. And that's a team, if you start looking at their schedule, it's kind of the opposite of Tampa. You can start to see a scenario where, man, if they get on a roll, they just might be able to hang around this AFC wild card race.
So it's a big day. Lots of CBS great games. We're going to watch Houston 2-0 go into the Meadowlands as well. Thanks for this morning, and safe travels back to Baltimore.
Thanks, guys. Have a great weekend.
There's Jason Lockenfora spending a few minutes with us on Brady and Walker. As we mentioned, Denver-Seattle, really the marquee matchup. That'll feature in our Terrible 10 coming up at 8:40, of course, where you can win $150 and Bills tickets courtesy of Bodog.
I always get fascinated with, I imagine the market. You know, what Tampa Bay, what the temperature would be like this morning doing what we do there, and some of the calls you'd get. I'm always fascinated by that.
Or Yangry are losing, you know, 17-14 and giving up a late touchdown.
Come up 6:48, best and worst. Tampa might make an appearance in that.
And speaking of, one of the worst predictions ever made by an analyst in any sport, how he'll learn to own this one. We'll tell you about that at 6:52.
Prices like no other, from a club like no other, the Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. Brady and Walker continues on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
It's an interesting 24, 12 hours for me right now, but saying that, again, I feel bad that Phil had to be put in that position for a conversation that I thought was very lighthearted.
6:43, Brady and Walker. That was Steve's spot yesterday. Should the Toronto media, in all its TMZ glory, be embarrassed of the events of day one of Leafs camp?
No.
They won't be, see, but should they be?
No, because there'll be worse things that come up that are just sillier. And some people say, well, how come you're talking about that? Because we're pointing out that it's silly. I mean, I've been really consistent about the Leafs. I really have about who I want to talk to about them and who I don't. And I often hear the tough Toronto media. There are some panda bears that just placate these players and absolutely, rub their tushies when they're on a 4-game losing streak. I don't think their teeth are being bared, because we know there's guys that get in bed with players and get in bed with coaches and just love them. So I hate judging the media as a whole entity, but to take the spot Kessel thing, I thought there were some intriguing aspects to it. You were. I read the article a couple times because I wanted to see if I missed anything first time around.
I read it a couple times. I didn't think.
Well,
there
I don't
was
think
an
it's crap.
And
the quote, listen, the quotes are obviously accurate, so that tells me something right there. It got a lot of eyeballs. It got a lot of attention. I'm not telling you that's the be all and end all now. And I think Dave Festuk is an excellent journalist. I do. I didn't like, for example, I came on the air and I said I didn't like him calling James Reimer's mother in Manitoba and finding out how he's feeling and whether he's experiencing headaches. I had a guy sitting next to me at the time going, nothing wrong with it. Festuk's a good guy. I'm like, that's not what we're talking about here. I don't like that. So I agreed with a lot of people who criticized that. But that said, there's been a lot of other things that have been really fair game with coaches and players. Really fair game. That I think journalists have done here. I the only issue I have is I wouldn't have granted these minor hockey coaches anonymity. Fred Thompson from the Mississauga Novice Reps,
yes,
shouldn't get to not have his name in the paper with a quote, because otherwise he's telling tales behind someone's back, it feels like.
And even then, what I had a problem with is this is for a major market, big newspaper, a story on a big star that people are talking about. This was as close to my cousin's uncle's brothers heard this from the rink attendant type of story as you can find. It was ridiculous.
But the one thing that I thought stood out, and the one thing I'd say about Randy Carlyle yesterday, is he said, listen, sometimes special talents, there are different rules, and we're going,
yes,
of course.
Yeah.
And I'm not even saying it happens in our business. You can tell a TV executive could tell a TV anchor, hey, play this story this way and start saying more of this. And 50% of the time, the guy will go, that's a good idea and that's great advice. And 50% of the time, somebody will say, well, that feels uncomfortable and forced and it's not really who I am. That happens all the time. I totally understand it. I listen to people on the radio. I watch people on TV and go, well, I wouldn't do it that way, but they're really good at it. That's okay.
So why are people surprised at this?
Kessel didn't like a breakup. He wants to do what he does on the ice. Now, that said, the one thing about this, Andrew, is you played more extensive hockey than I did. The breakout's a pretty important play. Does Phil, if Phil Kessel wants to do what he wants on the power play, that's fine. If he wants to carry the puck through neutral ice. If they say, Phil, you are hurting what happens with the other four players on the ice if you don't do it this way, and if you just want to have it all your way, and teams know what you're going to do every single time. The biggest problem the Leafs had was getting the puck out of their own damn zone last season.
Yes, it was.
So that's the one thing I look at, but it doesn't... I didn't get the sense from yesterday thinking there's some huge rift here.
It's
going to be a disagreement. Eric Spoelstra can't tell LeBron James, and I'm not saying Kessel's LeBron, but Eric Spoelstra, LeBron, you know what? Because LeBron's just going to go, I do what I do. I do what I do, and I'll try and involve everybody else. And I'm talking about a guy who's a great passer, great assist, great awareness of the court. And Phil Kessel is not quite all that at times, but he's got one dimension, and you better let him emphasize that dimension.
And I think that's the thing. This morphed into, Phil Kessel is very, very difficult to coach. And it began there because, Fred, who coaches the Pee Wee AA Sharks in Brampton, is running to the media telling him a joke that Steve Spotts told a guy that hasn't even coached a game yet.
I hope those guys had the... I felt a little bit bad when a player and a coach, they both got the question. And again, I think this is a ridiculous question because you already know the answer. Randy Carlyle, do you hate Phil Kessel? Phil Kessel, do you hate Randy Carlyle? Be a little bit better than that. Be a little bit more journalistic than that. I'm not on the air pretending to be a journalist, but I know what I can support and what I can't because I've done a lot of different jobs in the media. I happen to be here now, but I've been in those rooms trying to get stories and trying to source stuff out. And I'm telling you, I think there's some really low-hanging fruit sometimes in this city, of course.
Leaf camp continues today, the first on-ice session. We will talk a little Phil Kessel with Michael Grange. He had an article that's coming up at 7:20. Also, Matt Barnaby later in the show as well. Before we get to best and worst, of course, the puck drops October the 8th on the NHL on Sportsnet. And Sportsnet 590 The Fan wants to send you to the ultimate NHL fan experience to celebrate the start of the new season. You could be at 5 games in 5 nights in 5 cities. October the 8th, travel provided by Expedia.ca. You can enter now on our website, sportsnet590.ca. Let's do best and worst.
Best.
Bob McCowan.
And worst.
Josh McCowan.
With Brady and Walker.
It's spelled the same way.
That is true. Josh McCowan was the pant load last night. I'll take worst loss right off the bat, and it is tough to give it to anybody else. Not too often. Can you say that was absolutely horrifically embarrassing? And on a national broadcast, the announcers in the middle of a play are saying, that's embarrassing. Tampa Bay was embarrassed last night. It was 56-0 in the third quarter. That's not NFL football.
That was a college football cupcake-type schedule thing where Rice goes to Oklahoma. They know they're going to get their brains beaten. But you know what? Why that happens? Athletic directors get big-time money. If you go to Florida State and you're Toledo, you get millions of dollars for your athletic program by showing up and getting your brains beaten. Tampa gets nothing for this. Their players get paid, but they got to suffer the humiliation of getting killed last night for the next 11 days. A lot of long week and a long rest for them as well, which isn't terribly helpful. That's a reasonable worst loss.
I've got to
go ahead and say that's unanimous. All right, so best win. By the way, just a reminder, Clayton Kershaw goes for win number 20. You can see that on Sportsnet Ontario today. Dodgers at the Cubs at Wrigley. But let's give best win to a very important win. Seattle goes to Anaheim and wins. Now, Anaheim might have been celebrating the night before. Let's just leave it at that. But King Felix went on the hill, shut the Angels out for 7 innings, 11 strikeouts, 2 walks. Easily could get the AL Cy Young Award, whether the Mariners make the playoffs or not. And Seattle pushes themselves ever so much closer. Kansas City has Detroit this weekend. Seattle ends up in Houston. Got to make some ground up if you're the Mariners, and they're obviously here playing pretty important games. They're now a game behind the Oakland A's, who, as you mentioned, are in an absolute tailspin right now. Game clear. Oakland right now would have to go to Kansas City for the wild card.
Best player, I'll give it to Indian starter Danny Salazar last night. Another solid start for him. He goes 7 1/3, 5 hits, 1 run, 9 strikeouts. Cleveland, they're not out of it yet. They're 4 games back. They have a series with the Houston Astros. We all know that the Astros can play spoiler, but it would be fairly exciting to be an Indians fan right now because you're four games back and Oakland looks like they're imploding. They needed a big start last night against the Astros, and they got it. So Salazar comes up big. Indians win it 2-1-13.
So let's give worst player to Sonny Gray. There's been a lot of pitchers that we've talked about, Andrew, who have sort of just really fallen off since the All-Star break. And Sonny Gray is one such starting pitcher. Gave up 5 earned runs in 5 innings last night. He has not won a decision since back on August 22nd, and that's the only one he's won since July 26th. So if you're not part of the solution, you're part of the problem. And Oakland's got some big, big problems right now. Imagine that. Going and getting Jeff Samardzija, going and getting John Lester, and you miss the playoffs. Ooh, they're close to it right now.
I can't imagine. It is 6:52, Brady and Walker. Now, this is low-hanging fruit because we all make predictions and we all make our fearless forecasts, and you don't like to... Boy, Seattle's going to be good. There's my prediction. You like to step out on a limb sometimes. But sometimes the limb is not worth stepping out on.
Herm Edwards, who's awfully fun to listen to. I always remember when NFL Network started, there was like a promo, and they used him running on a treadmill when he was still an NFL coach. And I thought, that's cool. This is not Mike Tice eating donuts and staying up 20 hours a night. Herm Edwards cares about fitness. Edwards predicted the Tampa Bay Buccaneers not only would make the playoffs, not only would win a game, they'd be in the Super Bowl.
Oof.
They'd play the Pittsburgh Steelers in the Super Bowl. And
oof.
That's not, you can't just erase that from the chalkboard and say, hey, I was just kidding. You're going to have to own this one for the next 13 weeks and explain. Think about who's in the NFC. Who on earth? San Francisco, Seattle, Green Bay, Philadelphia. They were going to win 3 playoff games against these teams?
Like last season, I predicted the Cincinnati Bengals to come out of the AFC. Now, is that an embarrassing prediction? No.
In a home playoff game?
Yeah, they won the division. They lost, obviously, to San Diego in an ugly one. Am I proud of it? No, not really. But it's really easy to take the Patriots and the Denver Broncos. But this is... this might be the worst prediction I've ever heard from a well-respected prognosticator.
I'm trying to, like, we'd need to find an NHL Stanley Cup final prediction at the start of a season that was so out of left, that would involve, like Columbus this year or New Jersey this year or something, and then it happens.
Who's like the sexy sleeper team heading into the NHL season? Because Tampa,
Dallas.
Kind of. Yeah, Nashville is probably mine.
Yeah.
But I'm not picking them to make the Stanley Cup final.
Yeah, big difference between, huge difference between that. And it's not like they're an established team. They're not just coming off a low and you think, well, we can squeeze one more year out of them. They're the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They've been bad for about 7 years in a row now.
Coming up at 7:02, Brady and I have differing thoughts on the Toronto Blue Jays. As we have all season, should we feel good about the way this year has gone, or should we feel dreadful? That's coming up next.